Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, along with Chris Novembrino. Coming up, our preview of what I am calling the most important pay-per-view in AEW's history. Your mileage may vary.
Ooh, geez.
I do. I think it's a very, very important pay-per-view for the future of AEW.
You know, Tony Schiavone is the perfect guy to announce it. It could be the most important
biggest pay-per-view in the history of our... No, I'm not going that far. And I'm not saying the ship be sinking. I'm just saying, Chris, you are a fan of the stock market. I'm saying that there are resistance levels and there is support. And I think we are hitting a major level of resistance. And it needs to break through a little bit, but more on that later. I was going to come in ball of fire like Reggie Hammond in the great Another 48 Hours, saying, I have been having a very bad day. My car was stolen. My power was out most of yesterday. But I have calmed down. I have calmed down because within the news, and I'm just going to... I'll put this to you, Chris, because I found this pretty. Other people may not, but I'm sentimental and I'm old, so I'm going to go with it. In the Observer this week, covering the funeral of Jerry Jarrett, who we talked about last week, it turns out there was a sealed letter for him to be read at his memorial. And this is what it said. It says, I realize that in your hearts and minds that I might be larger than life. On occasion, and perhaps on other occasions, I failed to rise to your expectations. In death, we all choose the former and forget the latter. In this celebration of my life, I hope you will remember that I was both. I hope you will know that I was both a brave man and a coward, a very smart man and a very dumb man, a very successful man, yet a man who failed often. At times, I was the very best of you and also the worst of you. I hope you will realize that my greatest achievement in life was you. Each of you are my eternity. Listen to God and allow him to guide you. Love, Dad. I liked it. I don't know. It sounds like a very heartfelt promo on the way out, and I dug it.
I like it, too. I think it's so easy to make this revisionist history about the departed, where we make them into saints. I'm thinking,
or we go hard the other way if we didn't like, say, their politics or something to that effect, and that guy was a horrible human being. People are complex.
Yeah. And that I think it's important to take full stock of their work. I mean, you know, but I think in this particular case, it's directed at family members.
Yeah.
And because I can think of a friend of the family who died, and
your family.
not of the Jarrett family. I mean, I'm sure I can.
I thought
you
were going to Lawler for a second.
They're in wrestling, so there'd be a lot of people. I'm thinking specifically from like my own family, friend of our family. Where the husband died, and he was a less, was really not that great of a person. In the intervening years since his death, like, he has been revised by his widow up to be like a saint of sorts. And it's actually kind of sad, because it's like, no one wants to be like, Okay, but you know,
his wife loved him for all his faults. So, I mean, I understand the how dare you put him up as a saint, but I mean, was he her world?
I mean, you know, like they were together, but like, I mean, the cause of his death was also due to like selfishness. Like his death was premature, and it was because of selfish decisions.
You got to piss on my grave, Chris, and that's where this is going.
I mean, Hawkins, you know, like, the book is yet to be written.
I don't know where, I don't know how to transition to anything from that, Chris. Yeah, this friend of mine died, but he wasn't very cool, and his wife propped him up.
I mean, you know, all I could do is speak the truth. This is podcast verite. of the highest order. People come. No. Don't move on. People come to this show.
Oh, I said, well, so what about no, so bad? Chris.
No, no. People come to the show for the authenticity. They wait their week.
They come for the garlic bread. What are we getting?
They're looking for something real every week on this podcast network in this life.
So yeah, my car was stolen, by the way, and I recovered it midnight.
But it was
night.
Recovered. It's good, yeah. good.
opening up. If you think wrestling is petty, it is. Peacock picked up streaming of the Reels Network. It will be broadcasting Reels programming if you have a Peacock subscription. Oh, but with the exception of MLW programming, watched by 97,000 people each week, which is a fairly good number because Reels is a growing network. But because of the exclusivity contract with WWE, the 4-hour block when MLW is shown and then they repeat a best of and then they do the West Coast feed or something to that effect will not be streamed. And Reels will be ending its run after 10 episodes, or MLW will be ending its run after 10 episodes are shown on the Reels service. Chris, we're still in a wrestling war.
Yeah, I just don't know how MLW is going to come back and beat WWE finally, Jeff.
97,000 people. That's not even like 10% of the SmackDown audience.
I'm starting to think WWE might win this one between them and MLW.
It feels like a 10-7 round. I don't know. And I like Court Bauer. We talk a bit, but man, first the case gets thrown out and now this. I'm just like, man, he can't win for losing. Elsewhere, Brett DiBiase, the son of Ted DiBiase, who was with WWE for a few years, including a brief period on the main roster, pled guilty on March 2nd for a federal charge related to wrongfully spending welfare money that was supposed to go to needy families in Mississippi. DiBiase worked from 2008 to 2011, mostly in developmental, and retired due to recurring knee problems. He's facing up to 5 years in federal prison and $250,000 in fines for his guilty plea on the charge of conspiracy to defraud the federal government. John Davis, the Mississippi Department of Human Services executive director from 2016 to 2019, pleaded guilty in September for wrongfully spending money on Brett DiBiase, including spending $160,000 in welfare money for DiBiase to go to drug rehab in Malibu, California. That is a swanky place that he went. Investigators say former DHS workers created invoices to pay DiBiase for teaching classes about drug abuse. Now, why do I bring this up other than the DiBiase family? Well, this is also the same criminal investigation where Brett Favre is allegedly guilty of doing very similar things, diverting funds from COVID for, say, sports programs and stuff like that. I say allegedly because Pat McAfee is being sued by Brett Favre. Brett Favre's lawyer says he's going to bankrupt Pat McAfee, former SmackDown co-host, hopefully soon to return. Chris, tread lightly, but any thoughts on this?
Well, I don't want to get sued by Brett Favre.
No.
He apparently has powerful attorneys.
Yes.
I think that people who do this sort of thing are like the biggest sleazes to have this much money, but like try to take advantage of loopholes and scam to get even more. I mean, it's like the lowest of the low.
Allegedly on Brett Favre's behalf. We want to say that to the
high-powered lawyers who wish to bankrupt rich people. I said people who do these sorts of things.
Yes, I do. Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That's, I said it like that for a reason. I mean, there are people who really... I don't have to put allegedly in there.
No, you don't. I am putting it in there.
Okay.
I'm covering our asses. It's a legend. Okay. Take that. Ha. Come get us. Now, in other jurisprudence, geez, Hawkins,
jeez.
News.
Okay, all right.
It's Shabbos, everybody.
It's going to be my last show.
No. Joel Pearl, friend of the... He'll forgive me. Yeah. Jeff Hardy, his DUI case has been closed. It was closed right after we went to print last week. Via the Volusia County court records, here is his sentence. A 38-day county jail sentence with 38 days credit for time served, 2 years probation, $4,586 in fines and court fees, that's $4,586, a 10-year suspension of his license, 2 years with an interlock device, and 90-day vehicle impoundment. He has 10-year suspension off his license. Why is the vehicle impounded? Never mind.
I'm confused what the interlock is for then. Like, why would you need an interlock if you can't drive?
The 10 years are suspended on the license, but for two, he can't get his car started. Court-mandated DUI school or drug rehab program and the ever-popular community service. I think by our tone, you can tell... We talked about this when he was arrested. I hate to come down hard on someone with addiction problems, but this is a man who rented a car with already a suspended license, drove drunk, got into an accident. This is not his first merry-go-round. I just don't know, Chris. I know that there are two different systems of justice, one for celebrities and the wealthy and the powerful, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I know he is trying to control his demons. I know. That's all I'm going to say.
Look. I just take an unbelievably dim view on repeat offense drunk driving incidences. I will even say I look at first time offenses in a different way. People have a night where they have too many drinks, get behind the wheel. But like when you have multiple offenses like this, I think the law should take an extremely dim and stern view on this stuff. And to do anything otherwise endangers the other people on the road. So I think that the courts failed the people of the state here. Yeah, okay, this guy's, you know, not going to be allowed to drive for 10 years, theoretically. But the issue with him already was that, you know, having a suspended license didn't stop this guy from trying to drive a car.
Yeah.
I think that people who do these sorts of things, especially when it's on this many times, they need to go to jail for a long period of time. Like that they need to be severely punished. It's the only way. They've proven that they cannot be safe on a day-to-day like that. Because any given night, Jeff Hardy might get loaded and decide to get behind the wheel of an automobile again.
Yeah, I mean, when he rejected rehab from WWE, I think that said everything I needed to hear, quite frankly.
Right, yeah, especially we're talking about the specific person here. This is a guy who is pretty unrepentant about his substance abuse issues.
Oh, but this time it's court-mandated.
Court-mandated repentance?
Yes. That'll make people repent. I'm sorry. My Law and Orderness is coming out. I will drop the subject. Personnel news. Eddie Edwards re-signed with Impact. I think that's perfect for him. I'm not sure Ring of Honor might bring him back in this new iteration. And he continues to re-sign and sign again with Impact. I think he's solid for them. Neither of us watch Impact on the reg. I watch it sporadically when I'm bored on a Thursday and I don't want to watch classic wrestling, but you know, and I assume Davey Richards will probably be eventually back in Impact as well. I think he's doing a card, as a matter of fact.
I mean, look, the Wolves are, you know, a kind of classic Impact-y sort of tag team, so.
Your boy Shane Haste showed up, Chris. You happy?
I mean, like, there's really only one question here. Is he or is he not working as the beloved character Slapjack?
No, he is not.
Then I don't care. Shove it.
That's what I wanted to hear. That's my boy. Shaw Samuels is guest coaching in the PC this week. Where is Noam Dar and Shaw Samuels on my TV? Because they are utterly ridiculous and utterly needed, I think.
Yeah, I like Shaw Samuels a lot.
Caught you by surprise there, didn't I?
No, I was dealing with a cat thing. I like Shaw Samuels a lot. In particular, he just brought so much to the Noam Dar act. Like,
yeah,
he was like the perfect foil, and you know, he's kind of like he's a sneaky good obnoxious mid card heel, kind of like. No, I mean, just spitballing here. Shaw Samuels and Grayson Waller would be delightfully obnoxious together.
Yes. I think Shaw Samuels' strength is that mid-card enforcer character. And you know, he doesn't need to be the heavy. He needs to be the inept heavy. And I think it works for him. And he had some who was the kid with the mohawk?
Oh, I liked that guy.
Yeah, so did I. And they had a couple of bangers of matches in NXT.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. What was his name?
I can't remember it.
I can't remember it. Yeah.
I mean, they have done that NXT UK roster dirty in so many ways. Even the people that they've kept and put on TV. So, injury news. Anna Jay suffered some dislocated ribs in that table spot with Willow Nightingale. And Ty Mello has not been on TV because of a bulging disc in her back. Any comments on that, or can we move on?
No comments.
Okay, perfect. Ratings news. AEW Dynamite. 833,000 viewers, down from over a million for the big announcement by Tony Khan. Number three on the night for cable original still, so it did fairly well. But you had almost a 200,000 viewer drop off for your go home show for a pay-per-view, which will go into my explanation when we get into the Dynamite preview, but Revolution preview.
Yeah. Show clearly needs more Tony Khan on it every week. you can look at the numbers a couple of weeks prior. That Khan handoff to Adam Cole was just Dynamite. And you could very easily imagine hundreds of thousands of people tuning in for that.
For Raw, the Firefly, was it Raw or SmackDown? Last week's SmackDown, I can't tell. But anyways, Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa at Firefly Funhouse and Paul Heyman did 2.367 million viewers and 809,000 the 18 to 49. Rey Mysterio versus Karrion Kross, so this is SmackDown from last week, and post match with Dominic taunting Rey did 2.3 million viewers and 819,000 in 18 to 49. The final segment with Jimmy Uso and Sami Zayn and Solo Sikoa did 2.4 million viewers and a show-high 860,000. Sami Zayn did not get cooled off by the loss.
No. That's certainly one way of looking at it. I mean, another way is just that, like, Sami Zayn, his interactions with the Bloodline remain the biggest point of interest and intrigue for people. And he's... The story is so strong that it is keeping and even adding people in to catch the final segment.
I agree. We'll use that to transition into the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever came to mind in terms of wrestling this week, we can speak about here, no matter the TV show, no matter the promotion. And at the end, I have made this now a I have made a editorial change to keep people listening, or at least to fast forward from here.
Oh,
Revolution preview will be the last thing we do. So we will go to AEW last. So anything else is fair game, Chris, and I will let you begin.
All right. So we are in the midst of a wrestling war, as you mentioned, and you've got certain up and comers, AEW, MLW. They have been struggling to find their foothold in this wrestling war. And I mean, it's a tricky time. It's a difficult business, but there is one new promotion that launched this week that I'll be honest with you, Jeff. I think it's got the ability to invade the cultural zeitgeist.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I'm talking, of course, about Moist Wrestling League, which undoubtedly everyone listening to this show has
already. Wait, we have an MLW and an MWL?
Yes. The MWL, the Moist Wrestling League.
Moist Wrestling League, you say?
Yes, Moist.
Do tell.
Well, this is launched by beloved YouTuber Charlie, aka Penguin Zero, aka Moist Critical, and he's passionate about the business, and unlike a lot of promoters who are the son of somebody, and they come from money. This is one man with a dream, Jeff. A dream of bringing back the wrestling of our youth.
How so? I'll bite. How so?
By shooting short wrestling episodes. They put out the first one this week.
Okay. I'm the question is being begged.
Yes.
By tens and tens of people listening.
Oh yeah, no, I know. I can hear them.
I can hear them yelling.
This show is electric.
Why is it Moist?
Because he goes by like Moist Penguins. It's like this is his brand.
Oh, I thought maybe, they pour water on themselves. Okay, what's the hook of this wrestling?
That it is like, it's a semi-ironic wrestling promotion, or it's like a very ironic.
We've had interspecies wrestling promoters on here before when Rob was running the show. So nothing will surprise me at this point.
No. I mean, in this case, they just have like over-the-top characters like Dow Jones, who is like a caricature of the Million Dollar Man. Jeff, like I'll give you the plot of this.
That is fantastic.
The baby face is named Chainsaw. He's from Russia. He's kind of a Rusev-like character. In 2008, during the financial crisis, he lost everything, including his wife. Okay. And he's been bitter ever since. And like in this episode, he's going up against Dow Jones, who he blames for the 2008 financial crisis.
Is Dow Jones the man of 500 moves?
He does a moonsault. I don't know that. I wouldn't say he does 500 moves. It's from the second rope.
I'm gonna start to the lazy river with ever.
So like it's exciting. We also got introduced this week to Commissioner Phillips. Who was on vacation but came back from vacation.
Of course he was.
Yeah, and he was on vacation. And he came back from vacation to referee the match. But it turns out Commissioner Phillips is completely crooked. So that's honestly, that could be a big problem for the promotion.
I hate you so much right now.
I just think that if people listening to this show are looking for a little bit more action in the ring, go and check it out.
I will also plug my friend Josh Tariff's promotion, Wrestling Pro Wrestling, which is having a show during WrestleMania weekend. It's also a little campy, and I dig it. I like camp in my wrestling. I do like the comedy wrestling, the soft style, so to speak. It's nice. All right, I'll go to WWE then. Your new women's tag team champions, Becky Lynch and Lita. Lita has seen better nights in terms of in the ring. it was all mostly to get Trish Stratus out there to attack Aunt Pam. So that I think they are going to be paired off for a WrestleMania moment. But where does this leave Damage Control? Because my God, Chris, you know, I love me some EO and you know, I love me some Dakota. I hated this act because it did nothing for anybody in this act.
It was a pointless faction.
Yes.
That didn't really build anything. I mean, if anything, I guess you could say it helped Bayley further solidify her heel character. And she's like refined and made some tweaks during the damage
control. She's more goofy. She's goofy heel now, as opposed to angry heel.
Also true. Like, you know, the more you're talking me into this, Damage Control is a pretty lousy faction.
It's not the sum of its parts. That's how I will give the post-mortem. I don't know if they're done. I don't know if we're doing a multi-team tag. I don't know if it's
I feel like at WrestleMania, it's still going to be like Damage Control versus the three of them. But like...
It could be. I fully expect Becky and Lita to be paired with, that Shayna Baszler, Ronda Rousey for the tag titles and maybe like a gauntlet match that lasts 30 minutes. And then you have Natty and... For some reason, we've decided to team Tegan Nox with Natty. Why? Rachel and Liv, get all the women on there, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I don't have any thing with that. I don't know. I like Becky. I like Seth Rollins. It's just, I hate these characters that they're playing. They're far too...
They're ham.
They're hamming. That's the perfect word. They're ham, and so is Bayley.
Yeah,
and they're coached to ham, but it's a bad ham type of thing. It's a not connected hamming type of thing. It's not like.
It's just like literally the stage direction for Becky and Seth really feels like just be over the top.
Yes. No, that nails it. Your turn.
Okay. Let's see. What else happened on our WWE television this week? I'm trying to see what stuff. I'm like looking at NXT.
Would you like me to bring up a topic?
Yeah, give me a topic.
I really liked tonight. We are taping this on Friday night after SmackDown. I really liked for the most part, the Cody Roman. Face off. I think it's so for me as an actor slash performer or former actor slash performer. I don't know if I'm still an actor, to be honest with you. I do love the patience of both of them talking to each other and enunciating and getting the point across. My one quibble is that it feels like the nuance is too small for the environment. These are promos that should be studio wrestling or say on a platform somewhere in the arena taped for television, but the people can hear it or something to that effect. These are not arena promos that these guys are cutting on each other. These are personalized, building the drama and then doing the cut line to them. And to me, they're looking for big reactions from small lines. And I don't think they're getting the reactions from the audience they want. Cause they want when Roman says, what he said about you, and he takes those few beats and he's building the tension and he's expecting, everybody to kind of get that, that quiet stillness. And then he says, he nothing. And then, oh, that kind of thing. You're not going to get that from WWE crowds. It's far too sterile an environment to get real emotional reaction unless you are stepping over the line a little bit as opposed to just merely trolling.
I didn't have a strong positive immediate reaction to Cody's response to all of Roman's stuff. I felt like Cody's line after Roman got done with his was a bit weak.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, now I have no choice but to beat you or whatever. It didn't get me into the, it didn't talk me into the room more. It just didn't. Because it's sort of like all predicated on the idea that like, well, if everything you guys are saying is true, but like, he doesn't believe that. So then, I don't know. I found it. Cody was trying to be too clever.
Yeah, my knock against Cody is that you can watch the wheels turn and you can see when he's going, okay, now I need to milk the moment. And so he'll do nothing for a moment, or he'll nod and he'll wait. And I don't mind the slowness of the promo, but it's one of those things where it felt like they were trying to cut quiet promos, and quiet promos don't work in a stadium or even an arena environment necessarily. You need to have, you know, someone there with a microphone and miking it up and going back and forth so they can actually have the conversation, as opposed to two people with microphones talking at each other right there necessarily. I think if you want to have an intimate promo between these two, great, do it. But it doesn't have to be in the actual arena, in the actual ring to do it. I think that was my issue with it, was the staging of the entire thing.
Yeah.
You go.
So I was, while we were talking about this, I was just like reviewing NXT, and I watched this episode. It was completely skippable. I mean, the most interesting stuff that's happening is the Kiana James, Briggs & Jensen stuff. And
you're not wrong. You're absolutely not wrong in terms of.
Oh, and also, I shout out, like, the Creeds and Braun Breaker actually have really good babyface chemistry. In particular.
Before we move off from that. The preposterousness of asking Damon Kemp to be your tag partner.
I loved that. That was so funny.
I love it, but I'm also like, can someone just please call him a moron?
No, I mean I loved that whole segment because it was clearly Brutus like basically pulling like a practical joke on Julius, not once but twice. Like.
Damon Kemp was phenomenal with his reaction.
Oh my god,
I love that.
Damon Kemp's great. I mean, they have, but this is so funny. Is it like, okay, the show sucks right now, but they've got a number of different people in that roster who are like very, very, very good, and you could imagine quite easily this show being reconstituted in a much more coherent way around people like Carmelo Hayes, Roxanne Perez, the Creeds, Braun Breaker.
I'll throw Tiffany Stratton in there. Tiffany Stratton, she's fantastic.
Yeah, Stratton's pretty solid.
She's not a great wrestler yet, but she's good. But she has character down. She has character in spades compared to, say, Gigi Dolan.
Boy. she's not
my
good.
My mom kicked me in the head. Okay, that's our new baby face. Okay.
I love that, like, the only way WWE knows how to like characterize female baby faces is that like they grew up living in a box.
Oh, you're right.
Liv Morgan lived in a box. Gigi Dolan lived in a box, kicked in the head. Like, this is the way WWE does female baby faces.
Well, they do the whole we've overcome our Lacey and her
Lacey
story too. Yeah. Lived in a box, joined the military. All of them were homeless and out on the streets until they found wrestling. And specifically, not that bingo hall crap, the WWE. Oh my god, yeah. Brooks Jensen is gonna totally cock block his boy, right? Am I mixing the two up again?
Yeah, well, you have Briggs and you have Jensen. And
which one's the virgin?
Briggs, Josh Briggs is going to cock block Brooks Jensen.
Yes. That is totally happening with Brazzer's secretary and buxom Brazilian, or Brooks and Brazilian secretary and porn accountant, as somebody in the Voices Slack called her. That said, they're hitting the beats. It's a trashy story, soap opera story, with a little bit of hitting it close to home for me, but falling in love with a woman who's bad for you is a time honored tradition. But they're hitting the beats in this melodrama. And they're doing that one correctly, as opposed to, say, Nathan Frazier, who returned. Okay.
Not really sure what he's doing.
We're still wasting the mid-20s of Tyler Bates somehow. I don't understand that. And he's looking even worse. He's now not wearing knee pads. I think he's always not worn knee pads, but he's letting his hair grow out. He's going to go live in a box for a while, I think.
His character sucks now.
Yes.
And like his look sucks now. Like it's,
he's not the baby face underdog young champion anymore. Now he's the 25-year-old who's under contract and deciding to waste his money getting tatted up and rebelling against the things he used to be. It's so weird.
It's so weird. Like it, you know, not everybody has that ability to be the white meat baby face like that. And like for him to just sort of punt on that to do yoga master or whatever the hell this thing is.
Cool. He's doing Jason Kincaid's gimmick almost. When Kincaid decided to be, you know, do this weird spiritual guru type thing. Just take him, shake him and go, what is the point of your character? What is his driving ambition?
It's focusing his chi, apparently.
Wait, I need to take this moment. he's gonna be Transcendental Orange Cassidy. Is that the point?
I mean,
whatever.
Orange Cassidy.
Let go of your material possessions and just be one with the mat.
Going the wrong way, man. Going the total wrong way.
That's it, Carmella. That match was phenomenal. I won't go phenomenal, but I love Carmelo and him together.
Yeah, no, they're really good. I Trick Williams just didn't need to be there.
No.
Trick Williams is it didn't, he didn't need to be involved in this match. And I just think that
he's the ultimate walk-on in a scene that doesn't need a walk-on.
Yeah. He's just always there, and he doesn't do anything, really.
He comes in, tells a joke that ruins the entire energy of a scene, and then you have to cut the scene eventually because it's just, sorry, improv reference.
But no, he's like the Madcap Moss to Carmelo Hayes' act, though. It's just like, why is this guy here?
The record scratch. Oh, yeah. It's Madcap Moss. Is he a heel or a baby face? Who knows?
Madcap right now?
Well, they're like, doing the Emma program.
Yeah, with Emma, I think they're baby faces.
But then, that was a heel thing with them. Then he goes in and he's a baby face in the match last week. Okay. Can we all sit down with these people and figure out? Look, I don't need black and white. I just need you to know what your motivation is. That's all I need, really. I mean, as opposed to, I'm going to be a character this week. I'm Madcap. I'm Idaho. That's what I want. I want a Ralph Wiggum Idaho gimmick where he just comes in a sack of potatoes. It says, I'm the state of Idaho.
Does he live in a box?
He lives in a box. Yes.
Oh, so he's a baby face. He'll
be women's champion someday.
Yeah, you know? He's a baby face.
He's a baby face. He's a scrappy baby face. Look at this. Oh, the snark. And the funny thing is, I find SmackDown far more palatable than Raw.
Oh yeah, by a lot.
I just cannot watch Raw on 1x speed.
We are way back into the Raw is now must be fast forwarded in order to be digested sort of like territory for me.
I almost want to take the people saying Vince is back in creative and say they're correct. They're not, but but it feels that way. But you also just think this is the institutionalized way that WrestleManias are built now. Although I liked Brock. Can I say I liked Brock in his segment? Where he's playing weird Saskatchewan cowboy. Here's the flask of moonshine that I made in my still. Let's drink, MVP. Sure. Point to the sign, spit take F5.
I mean, I thought that segment was fine. I mean, it was a little long, but like, and you knew where it was going, but sometimes long and you know where it's going. Like the big build is worth it.
Bray? Question mark?
Yeah, Bray question mark. and so now Lashley gets to feud with Bray Wyatt because he didn't want to have a match with Brock Lesnar.
Again. I'm going to say this about them. I'm going to say this about the House of Black. I'm going to say this about anybody who decides that they have watched a lot of early to mid-aught WWE and have decided to do something Undertaker adjacent or spooky character adjacent or something. Mind games aren't enough. Because they come off as so just, I'm going to chew this scenery right now. And, he's playing mind games with him. To what end?
It's the Joe Gacy thing, too.
Joe Gacy, who is, although I kind of like that idea of he's going to open his own school. I kind of want to see this.
I mean, I'm actually sort of here for like a faction war between Chase, you, and the Schism. Like this
and Schism College, a private small liberal arts school in the Northeast.
No, like SCC, it's Schism Community College.
Schism Community College, it's a diploma mill for.
They're like Phoenix University.
Oh, they're for profit.
Yeah, Chase is running like a real school and they're running like, yes.
So Schism Community College is a for-pay correspondence school in the dark arts.
Yeah, yeah. You could get your two-year degree in Unity.
In Unity, in hugs, in white contact lenses, and shaved heads. How have we not figured out to abort this for the grizzled young vets? How have we not?
Jeez, I know. Like, I again talking about how you've got this loaded roster where you could imagine doing literally anything else with some of these people. Like,
and we have Ava, no longer Ava Rain, Ava matriculating there, and we'll probably get Isla Dawn and Alba. I'm trying to remember a terrible name, Alba Fire in there because my God. Did they just, you know what's fun? They, oh, look, Alba Fire. Let's pour ice cold water on her and put out that flame.
No, yeah. To do that with Kaylee Ray, who was like a forever champion, literally.
Yes.
Like to just rebrand her as Alba Fire and like completely erase her title reign, essentially. Baffling.
She's show that they are going to have WrestleMania weekend is no buys. So far, because the programs that they have, okay, we're gonna get rid of Mako and Roxanne next week, which is I'm training with her. No, that never MMA. You separate training camps. What are you doing, stupid baby face? So we're gonna get Roxanne and probably Tiffany Stratton, which. I forget if this thing's at Nokia Live or if it's at LA Live or if it's in the actual crypto.com arena. But that thing's going to be a ghost town if it's in the bigger arena. unless
I don't think Tiffany Stratton is ready to be
she's not ready for prime time, is what you're saying.
No, I don't think she's ready to be belted yet. And I think, especially if you have Roxanne beat Mako, at that point, you've basically told the Roxanne Perez story.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that Stratton's got going for her, but she should not be seriously in the conversation for the title just yet.
Let's end on a positive note with WWE. Dominic Mysterio is still great.
Oh yeah, no, it's all good, stupid fun. Like Rhea Ripley, like winning his matches for him, and then him doing like the frog splash. Like he's ridiculous.
He gets it. All right. So non-Revolution AEW notes. Here is a rant I went on Wednesday, and I'm going to kind of repeat most of it here. AEW has a can't plug their guest stars problem. Aussie Open should be a much, much bigger deal coming in from New Japan and having, you know, being a, for lack of a better term, being an attraction for the spreadsheet nerds. And they've been stuck the past couple weeks in battle royals, not really doing all that much. Same with, Juice Robinson had this problem when they brought him in. Heck, Switchblade had this problem when they brought him in. Commander in the face of the Revolution ladder match. We got a day or two, or actually I think we got a little bit longer, but you know, there was no hyping on television about this with video packages and really saying, this is a big deal that this guy is coming in.
I had no idea who Commander was.
He is the hottest luchador on the American indie scene right now. He's on PWG a couple times. He is what people said Grand Metalik was a few years ago. Rope-walking dynamo.
No, I saw some of the match. He is quite good. They need to tell me these things.
Yes!
Like it,
and show me these things over the
neon sign. I don't mean something on Twitter or no, like neon sign. The story of the match should even be going through like, who is Commander? Why is he here? What is he doing?
I will give you an example. There are probably better examples, but this was the one that came to mind first from my childhood and my wrestling. When the Road Warriors turned on Dusty with the six-man champ
spoiler
for the six-man
alert
titles, and they needed a replacement, and they started hyping up Tenryu. And I believe there was a couple of video packages in there. I might be incorrect about that, but they hyped him for weeks before we ever saw a Tenryu match with the Road Warriors. And boy, Chris, did that get me hyped to see who this Tenryu guy was. That's all I want, the build a little bit here, as opposed to slapdash. Well, that's not how modern television, indie wrestling, blah, blah. Okay, great.
Dude, WCW used to be so good about building Jushin Liger, like whenever he was coming in.
He's coming, yes. That's an even better one. There are weeks of Jushin Liger Jushin Liger is returning.
Yep.
Whenever he'd come back. Yes. No, that was a great one. And Aussie Open did a match on the new Ring of Honor. I would have kept anything New Japan, because Zack Sabre Jr. apparently was also on this Ring of Honor show. I would keep anything main roster New Japan off of Ring of Honor, for the very reason that Ring of Honor is your secondary brand under the AEW banner, and you want them to seem prestigious. Especially, I mean, look, you're going to get the same people buying Forbidden Door. Don't get me wrong. But there is a certain panache to making people seem like a big deal, and Ring of Honor ain't it to me. I get wanting eyeballs there, but stars need to be treated as stars. And I just think when they do the guest star thing, it's just an afterthought of, oh, he's better known from New Japan, and so we're going to put him on Rampage and, you know, the halfway death spot or whatever. And you're just like, okay. Was just his presence supposed to bring viewers? Just a couple of people on a message board love him. So I think they are dropping the ball on the guest star thing.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second. Fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
I completely agree. I think that the other benefit that you get from making these sorts of promotional videos is you make it seem like AEW is getting these big names in.
Yes.
Like the anticipation makes whatever act it is feel bigger. And when you just like throw that act out there, they don't feel as big as they could be.
And of course, give me a squash match.
Introduce
me.
Like, this is kind of like a bizarre example, but like, run with me here. You run a restaurant and you book Willie Nelson, and but you don't promote him or anything. You just like put Willie Nelson
live music tonight.
Willie Nelson's in the corner. You don't even like set up a stage or like a real PA thing. Like, you could go, well, the evening was fine. Willie Nelson came in there and delighted the 20 people who were there who were agape.
No, you see, Chris, we don't announce it. And then word of mouth goes around that, oh my God, Willie Nelson was at Maggiano's Italian Grill.
Never to return.
For country music night at the Italian place. Yes. That way
it's
we save on marketing.
How this works. I don't know.
We have billions to it. And also, just a big pet peeve from watching Dynamite, which overall was very good. I thought it had some really, really good promos.
That Orange Cassidy match was like so close to the type of match that we've been saying we wanted Orange Cassidy to have for a long time. I liked it a lot.
But here's my gripe. Can we get some sound mixing and some microphones and test them and maybe not do a live tape backstage when we can do a couple takes and then edit the sound mixing in post and make it seem live? The Britt Baker promo, you missed half of it because the sound was being drowned out by the crowd. You missed some of the parts of the Adam Page promo because he's doing it under a bridge or in a farm or whatever the heck it was. And nobody had a boom mic. They were using the microphone on the camera or the iPhone or whatever they were using, and it wasn't picking up some of the stuff. I mean, all the sound mixing was, for good moments, it was a problem. And I'm just like, this, I'm not saying this is low rent, but even the lowest rent basic cable pro wrestling on Saturday from 1985, use the stick mics if you need to. Okay? I just want to hear the people as opposed to the ambient noise of the environment as he's trying to cut a promo where he says he doesn't like violence or whatever. I mean, mic your people up, get some lav mics, get a boom mic, something. Show me you care. Cause that's the problem, is it's this Ed Wood filmmaking where it's like, oh, we're going to do some guerrilla filmmaking right now. We're going to do it once. And then I can't hear like half of Jake the Snake Roberts in an alley. Or whatever. It's been going on for 3 years now, Chris. You know what grinds my gears? I now stop.
The multi-man AEW match, particularly like the battle royal sort of thingies, they are
overbooked.
And they're very flat for me. Like the tag team battle royal in particular. Like, because I feel like they've done a few of these now in the last couple of months.
Was the same team since last week.
That was last week. All right, because I feel
Dan
like
Housen and Orange Cassidy, yeah, pretty much.
I don't want to be like reductive and be like, I feel like I see one of these things like nearly every week, but like it feel Okay, so that was literally just last week. All right.
Yeah. No, they did a regular battle royal last week, and this week they did a casino battle royal.
I wish they could find a way to book these to be interesting. I really do. Because they aren't. And they just happen, and I'm waiting. I usually just skip to the end because it's they're not great vehicles for storytelling.
Right.
The action is usually schmeh. The ladder match was fine. I mean, beyond fine. Like, they did a lot, like, you know, death-defying stuff. It's just like, again,
not a lot of build.
I want these ladder matches, man, especially when you get five people.
Preach. I know where you're going.
I want these people to have legitimate reasons why it would make sense for them to win this ladder match.
Yes.
Like,
preach.
Sammy Guevara's just effing there. Like, there's no, like, Sammy Guevara's gonna, you know, go up against Samoa Joe, like, or go up against Wardlow. Or, like, there's not plausibility going into these matches, and they could be tremendous vehicles for storytelling if there was, but instead, like, the main focus when they get these matches together is let's get a bunch of really badass workers like Commander, like Guevara, like AR Fox, and we know that they'll do really cool stuff. They're gonna go out there and they're gonna do the cool stuff. But like, we don't have stories for AR Fox. I like AR Fox. AR Fox is a, you know, Lucha Underground. He was a good little storyteller too. But none of these people have any reason of being there. It's in a lot of ways, it's my same frustration with like Cody being airdropped into the Roman Reigns Bloodline storyline. But like, AEW is very, very content to just like slap good workers together. And I mean, look, they've got for certain segment of their fan base for sure. That's enough. But for me, I need these to be vehicles for storytelling.
And again, otherwise, I understand that this is modern wrestling, as people say, "Oh, we've moved on with the times." But I at least want to think you're trying to win the match.
To me today, in the modern era,
huh?
I don't know. It's like, well, this is modern wrestling. I'm like, that's okay. Then let's tell me stories today. Then, like, yeah, that's my response to modern as a critique.
I agree, because it's the theme park stunt show, and I get it. But I actually want them to. Are they trying to win the match, or are they just going to do this cool thing? Because that's the thing that takes me out of these matches, is the moment that somebody just decides, I'm going to do something kooky and crazy, but I'm not really trying to win the match. I just want to do this kooky thing because I got this ladder here and I can fly. That said, Sammy Guevara is the king of these matches, and he is fantastic, and he was the best thing about it. I thought Takeshita did solid. I have no problem with referees steadying people, but I wish we would just coach people to get new ladders. You don't need to use that ladder right there that you just screwed up and bent out of shape and climb it. Your safety is important to us. That's why I will defend the referees doing that. I wish they'd shoot it a little different so that they hide the referees holding the ladder. But you have 12 ladders out there. Use another one. We'll figure out where to cut time later. You know, any response to that, or should we just go into the preview?
Oh, we can just go into the preview.
I have ranted long enough. AEW Revolution. Why is it the most important of the company's history? Well, because as we said in the news segment, they lost almost, 300,000 viewers from week to week for their go-home show. They have a new champion on his first defense. And I'm not certain the product's getting any hotter. I like MJF. Don't get me wrong. I think they lost a little bit of the through line when they decided to make... The ending was in the beginning, and in the beginning it was MJF is a fraud of a wrestler compared to Bryan Danielson. Well, he proved that wrong with the Takeshita win, and now we're going into MJF is a sociopath losing his marbles, telling his origin story week after week, which changes. Always dealing with some sort of trauma that then goes into him saying terrible things. Yeah, I
No, you have to write your own story with this story, and that's why this story sucks. I've seen people endeavor to explain why this is a coherent story, and all these versions of why it is a good story have a different story to them. So that tells me that it's not actually a very good story. People are filling in the gray space with colors they like, and that makes a more pleasant painting. But I think you nailed it. The whole MJF story at the beginning, to use the ending is the beginning, or like should be seated in the beginning, and this is part of the reason why this has gotten so off the rails, is you have this whole inflection point with Regal, but we can't really talk about that. And the whole basic idea that like Regal didn't think he was good enough. And then the story is, you know, is that he is a fraud, like he's not good enough to beat Danielson. So he inflicts the injury onto Danielson. But even that was sort of convoluted. Like for he inflicts the injury onto Danielson and then makes him go through a gauntlet. That's a complete Rube Goldberg machine of a trial of ordeals for Danielson as the challenger, and it hasn't actually made a more coherent story. And now we have told multiple Joker-like origin stories for this guy. And I guess the most cogent thing is MJF's just a bad dude. It doesn't really matter what his origin story is. He's just a bad guy.
He's the devil.
Yeah. Womp, 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 fart noise. Yeah. Like that's it. And to even get to that, that's not actually the story they've told. You have to kind of finish connecting those dots for yourself.
And to that point, it was, okay, he's the devil. He's in control of all these things. And now all of a sudden he's lost control. Well, that's just because we didn't follow up on anything with the firm or Stokely Hathaway. Everybody's going, oh, watch, they'll do it here. Great. But hey, you know what? You're going to tell me that if they resurrect anything about the firm or the pinnacle tonight, that's good long-term storytelling, or is it just they just dropped all the beats and decided that would the ending going to be?
Yeah, and then that ending wouldn't have been earned. It has nothing to do with attacking Regal,
right?
Which was the initial starting point for Danielson. The reason why Danielson wanted to beat, I mean, and this is the other reason why this story sucks. Danielson's motivations have just been moving all over the place too. It's not just MJF's characterization, right? Danielson was out there initially to avenge the attack on Regal, because even though Regal did a bad thing, Danielson still has like such a deep love for Regal and such contempt for what MJF did to Regal that like he needed revenge even more than the title.
Well, the fascinating thing is in the past month or two, we have completely shifted all of the motivations of the Blackpool Combat Club. We have taken Claudio and Yuta and turned them heelish along with Moxley. And we have taken the heelish Danielson and turned him babyface with absolutely no reason to it other than
narrative convenience.
Yes, exactly. It's yeah. Anyways, 8 matches as a post time. I was going to look at Twitter to see if Hobbs somehow interjected himself into this TNT championship match, which I think he probably should because it's in San Francisco, but I'll go with what's written here instead. If you want to look at, well, actually I have the Twitter, so I can do it sometime. Yeah, when I'm talking. Yeah. Starting with Christian Cage versus Jungle Boy Jack Perry in a final burial match. I liked Christian Cage's promo. I think his promo is just straight ahead. It's what MJF should be doing, but MJF wants the laugh line so bad in there to kind of release the tension of being a jerk. I hated that Jack Perry thing. What, you know, we say AEW wants to be an alternative to WWE, but so many people have creative instincts that want to be WWE. And this thing, I thought for sure he was burying the old Jungle Boy gimmick and we're going to get Jack Perry born again hardcore. after the misstep last week of him being a badass babyface and then coming back to be a stupid babyface. Nope. He's burying Christian Cage. We have replayed this feud 8 million times, it seems, in the past year and a half, 2 years. Are we done with it at this point, Chris? Who wins between Christian Cage and Jack Perry?
I almost want to say Christian Cage wins because of Luchasaurus interference.
Yes!
The ending is in the beginning, you see?
You see? Yes.
It's gotta be Jack Perry, but like the Jungle Boy gimmick's the thing that does need to be buried here, so like it's not outside of the realm of possibility that Cage wins somehow.
Yeah, I just, oh, it feels like Luchasaurus comes back. Okay, it looks like Powerhouse may have inserted himself into the match. So we'll go under the assumption that that is correct. And we'll see what happens, or he might just cash it in at Revolution. But let's just go under the assumption that he is involved somehow in this Samoa Joe Wardlow match. But we'll get to that in a sec. In a well-built lore storyline, weeks in the making, and with the drama and intensity there, the elite of Kenny Omega, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson, fresh off of playing basketball with the Hardy family office, or whatever the hell they're calling it right now, versus the House of Black of Malakai Black, Brody King, Buddy Matthews, Julia Hart, dark rooms, spooky,
teleporting
taboo type things, you know, that kind of stuff. It will be a great, well-worked, choreographed match that people will rave about. I am certain of this. What's the narrative through line here? Do the House of Black get the Trios titles or no?
No, they don't. I think the elite retain.
I think this is that this feud must continue.
Yeah.
Type of thing. And it's like, oh, okay. But you get to see them fight again. Okay.
Fight forever.
Oh, you mean like the best of seven?
God. Like,
that made these titles so important.
Yeah, and there were such memorable matches. I mean, who could forget the action of match number three?
Here's what I'm also going to say. I implore you, if you are an AEW fan, buy this pay-per-view. They get 833,000 to 1 million viewers a week, and they only get 173,000 of you buying the pay-per-view. I know some of you, oh, it's a big corporation. I can't afford it, whatever. But, yeah. Whatever you need to do to show your support for your artists and to make this company successful, actually practice random acts of paying for your content. Rant over. Rebuttal, Chris, or no?
I mean, I don't. Here's the thing. The price tag that they put on this, I just feel like they...
60's high.
It's high, and you're under obligation to create something that's worth that price tag. And I don't.
Okay, fair.
I don't. Yeah. I think, and that's the same thing with bands, right? Like, if I have a band and I want to charge like $40 or whatever, I need to be delivering a $40 experience.
They only do four of these a year, but it's funny. It's cheaper to get into the building than it is to buy the pay per view. At last, they had a low number, and this was what I was going to bring up before I even got into this, but the number there, as of the Observer press time, there were 7,662 tickets out for the show, a disappointing number for an AEW pay-per-view, and the lowest total a few days out since they were able to return to full capacity shows after the pandemic. The get-in price on the secondary market is down to $32, so there is no late rush of interest caused by something or other. Although there's no point at buying a low price secondary ticket now when there are plenty of them available at regular prices in a building that would sell for a pro wrestling stage setup of about 12,500.
Not great.
Proof is in the proof of the pudding is in the eating. That's all I'm going to say. Jamie Hayter versus Saraya versus Ruby Soho in a three-way match for the AEW Women's World Title.
I hate this story so much. Like, this match, this
Ruby's choice.
This match might be okay, but I hate this story so much.
What was the point of Riho and Toni Storm in all this, other than to get everybody out there to start fighting? I guess that is one, and then play Ruby's
music. You're right, because it's Saraya in the match.
Yes.
Like, what the hell? Like, why?
Why
wouldn't we be trying to put Saraya over unless we're being protective of her?
DMD's getting involved. Tony's getting involved. Whoever's going to help second Ruby is going to get involved. I'm thinking Sheeta. I don't know that for a fact. Doesn't look like we're heading to Blood and Guts. It looks like we're heading to DOA versus Los Boricuas versus faction warfare from
the Nation of Domination was the
Nation
other
of Domination's involved. Yes.
Yes. From the infamous race war angle that Vince ran in the 90s.
Chris Jericho, who do you have winning? I have Hayter retaining. Easy.
Yeah, Hayter retains.
Chris Jericho versus Ricky Starks in a singles match. The Jericho Appreciation Society are banned from ringside, Chris.
Well, all the current members are.
Yes. Although, narrative structure says if Sammy puts Action Andretti through another ladder, with Daniel Garcia's help, that would not make me go, you know, I really respect those guys and what they did to me in that match.
But
this is the way that Jericho thinks he's going to get Andretti over, is to be his butler in the JAS. I hope that's not the call here. I hope it's Andretti somehow helps Ricky Starks. But if that happens, of what use is it giving Ricky Starks the win because he got help? Every instinct in here says to me, overbooked mess.
Yeah. I'm going to say Jericho wins.
Wow. No, you don't. No. Not after that beatdown on Ricky Starks. You can't do that, Chris. I'm gonna tell you to change your mind here and try and
get it. No, but here's the thing. I saw Daniel Garcia this week, and I remembered when he was like one of the most interesting young wrestlers that we had seen in a long time.
He has a little pants now, Chris.
And he wears pants now.
He has pants now. Jericho has a...
Garcia has pants, and Chris Jericho is a black hole vortex that, like...
Although Ricky Starks has those shirts he's been wearing, like The Rock. Maybe that's his... Maybe Ricky Starks joins the chain.
Yes, the match ends in a no contest when Ricky Starks gets himself counted out by joining the Jericho Appreciation Society.
And doing his rock shtick.
After action, Andretti makes an impassioned plea to him in the middle of the match.
And then who gets the shoes? Oh, Sammy Guevara has to get those Seth Rollins shoes.
And like Andretti will have to get like a stupid haircut. He'll be like stupid haircut guy.
Yeah, he'll be stupid haircut guy. I have Starks winning this, but I'm not confident about it. I think, trust me, I'll get the kid over.
Yeah, no, I mean, Chris Jericho's ability to get people over the Jericho way in this company has really been something to behold.
Yes, we have gone on long rants about that. John Moxley versus Hangman Adam Page in Texas Death. As they call it, not a Texas Death match, but yes, a Texas Death match. Look, this match is going to be fantastic, I think. And it's going to have all of John Moxley's frontier martial arts wrestling thing. I think we're getting boards with barbed wire on it. I think we're getting the Kenny Omega type match. I loved John Moxley's promo. I think this is one of the better promos he's ever done in his life on Dynamite.
Oh, yeah, it was a really good promo. That was a really good promo.
I think Adam Page has to win this. There's no excuse for John Moxley to win this thing.
I mean, unless you're turning Moxley heel, like if you want to really commit to the heel thing.
Do we want Blackpool Combat Club to come out and try to screw Paige and then the Elite make the save?
I mean, I guess.
I don't know. I just
can't. I don't know.
I just think Hangman has to win this one, get a nice strong win over Moxley. Moxley can take his much deserved vacation. We can try and give Hangman some upper main event caliber promo time and programs, hopefully, and get him away from the Dark Order. And maybe see if he's the star of tomorrow that we thought he should have been when this company opened. Everybody's like, oh, this emo cow. He's an emo cowboy. It works. I'm just like, no, it doesn't. Sorry. The ratings say different. What are the tag team match? A controversial match. Chris, the work rate people are very, very upset that these four teams are in this as opposed to the four teams that were on Dynamite, which would have been a much, much more entertaining match. I think this match is going to over-deliver in some ways, but I'll explain when I break it down, but I'll let you break it down first. The Guns, your champions, coming in, Austin and Colton versus the Acclaimed, Anthony Bowens and Max Caster versus the best tag team right now in AEW, Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett versus Orange Cassidy and Danhausen. How do you see this?
Look, this is a story match.
Yes, thank you.
And they made a decision, which I basically applaud here, of going, we're not even gonna burn this down with like work kind of spots. There'll be some, you know, like Lethal and Orange Cassidy will do some cool stuff, undoubtedly. And the Acclaimed will do some cool stuff. And the Guns will probably over-deliver here, but like this is, if you're going to have the Guns retain, which is kind of what my prediction is, the Guns should be retaining over teams at this level. They shouldn't be retaining over like the best in the world. Like that'd be a ridiculous overbooking.
Banana peel finishes, all those things. Yeah,
it'd be a ridiculous overbooking of those guys.
Miz the tag team. You don't want that necessarily.
No. I think they need to run with the Guns for a minute here, see what you got. And that means slowly ramping them up. And this is a perfect vehicle for them to win.
I think there's going to be a little bit too much whimsy and whimsical comedy for my taste at first. My strategy would be to knock Danhausen out early, like against a barricade or something, so he can then do a comeback and his curse and whatever. But you let Orange Cassidy be the guy on the apron trying to win it for his team. And that's the struggle and that's the emotion in there while these other guys are fighting each other. I think Lethal and Jarrett are going to make everybody look like $1 million. I think not enough is said about how Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett are just killing this. I think there'll be a couple Satnam spots. There'll probably be a best friend spot in here. I am fully expecting the drama on this to be around Billy Gunn rejoining with his sons. I don't see any narrative cohesiveness to it other than they're my sons. you know, they kicked my ass, but I got to respect them for it. I hate that as a motive, but it might happen. But yeah, I think, you know what? I think there's going to be one of those matches that everybody goes, man, I was expecting this to suck, but I rated it 4 stars on my Excel spreadsheet. You know, that kind of thing. I think it's going to over-deliver. I'm going to be honest with you. I think it's going to over-deliver. It's not going to be a match of the year candidate.
No, I'm not going to go that far. I think it'll be a good, solid 3.5.
It's going to be a solid, fun match, I think. And everybody involved is mostly fun. Danhausen, not the biggest fan of Danhausen's ring work, but he's, you know, he has his place and he's over and you can hide his weaknesses. And I think that's what's going to happen. I am just wondering about the Acclaimed actually coming out of this match. Lethal and Jarrett will be fine. Lethal and Jarrett are the best. Lethal and Jarrett get boos vociferously and they know it and they know how to milk it. I don't know what you do from the Acclaimed after they're out of the tag team title picture. Because they're not an elite team you can put up against the Pentas and like the Bucks necessarily, but they're not bad. But I think they needed the belts more than the guns do. I think the Acclaim need these titles to really, and they needed a nice long run, but there's no way the guns are losing this in this match. Are my concerns valid here, Chris, or am I missing
something? No, I think you're dead on the money. The Acclaimed increasingly seem like a team that absolutely needs the belts and like a long title reign to get, like, they need them. It helps cover up that, like, yeah, they aren't quite at the they're not Aussie Open. They're not Penta and Phoenix, you know, when Penta and Phoenix decide to show up.
There
are a lot of teams that they're not at the level at, and the belts kind of help cover that up.
And finally, in your main event of the evening, millennials shudder, because I don't think they've had to sit through these types of matches. 60 minutes, definitely happening. Iron Man match for the AEW World Championship. Short attention spans, leave them at the door. Your champion, MJF versus Bryan Danielson. Break it down for me, Chris.
I mean, is there any other way for this to go other than MJF wins?
How do they get there? Let's go with that. Because I think we both agree, although, Chris, I think there is a strong case. And I know it sounds nuts because of how much I asked to put the belt on MJF. If Bryan Danielson wants to be the guy in AEW and Tony wants to actually market this company and get some growth,
there's a case for abandoning ship on MJF. I'm with you. There is a case to be made for abandoning ship on this.
I don't feel good saying that either by any means, because I love me some MJF, and I was saying a heel champion who could talk was going to be the secret to blowing this up. I haven't seen it yet, though. Maybe after this match, maybe. But yeah.
Man, for my money, I'll take Roman Reigns' cadence as like a heel promo over MJF's. I find Roman's character to just be so much more of a complete top heel champion on the
He's
other show.
He's a more
show.
In control champion, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a more complete and in control character with like layers, and it feels a lot more consistent. MJF has felt really all over the place.
Do you think this is a 1-0 match? Do you think it goes into overtime, or do you think it's one with multiple falls, or do you think it's somewhere in between?
That would be I think the most interesting story would be it's 1-0 and it's MJF finally breaking Danielson in the final moment, like the final minute.
To go 2-0 or to tie it?
To win.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, or maybe
0-0 going into last.
It's 1-1 going into the last. Yeah, and MJF just completely goes ruthless on Danielson's arm and finally makes like Danielson cry and tap out.
I could see something like a 5-4 match, or like two of the falls that MJF gives up are just him getting DQ'd after just waylaying him with a chair, because they were playing up that shoulder storyline, which they sort of dropped in the last couple weeks. The arm storyline, whatever it is. You know, that thing where it's like he's willing to give up falls to damage him for later, and eventually getting that last fall within the last minute or something like that. I could see them doing a lot of falls just to keep the crowd into it. Like a high scoring football game type of thing where there's no defense and it's like 47-35 or something.
Man,
like that.
That goes the other way though.
That helps MJF in his, it's not that MJF's a bad wrestler. It's just that he doesn't really have a technical game plan in there to wear a guy down type of a thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's I'm gonna err on the side that this is a quote unquote high scoring game, just to get people involved and keep them excited, as opposed to watching and waiting and building the tension for one fall in 60 minutes. I think you can't do that with this audience. I think the crowd will turn on the match a little bit, to be honest with you.
I go MJF wins 2-1.
Okay. I think it's a much higher number than that. I'm going to go with many multiple falls, but MJF winning.
Put numbers. Numbers are, means nothing. Numbers okay. are your whole life's a lie.
I will say 8-7.
Okay.
I think there will be 15 falls in some way in this match, and it'll keep it active or whatever. Do you see any special guest stars for this match, or is it just the brass knucks? Those are Regal's brass knucks. With no William Regal.
I mean, so it's like AEW booking, so like this doesn't make a ton of sense, but run with me here. MJF is somehow bought off Blackpool Combat Club and they turn on Danielson.
Wow. I would not be shocked if this is how the firm reemerges somehow. God. I know some people were saying maybe the Pinnacle, but I just did not see the Pinnacle ever coming back. And after listening to Dax's podcast, which you have to take with a heavy, heavy grains of salt, I just don't see it working again if they do it, just because it was. Anyways,
what if like Adam Cole costs him the match?
And we just move on to Danielson and Cole? Or
Yeah.
I could see that. Where he comes out and you think he's a babyface because of all these promos he's been doing, and he actually goes just right back to what he's always been. I'm here for that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I think they're still trying to make MJF, and they're not gonna want to get like too outside helpy, but like
here's what I don't want. I'll tell you what I don't want. I don't want Stokely coming out and them teasing that, oh, he's still fighting with MJF and they turn out to be on the same side. We dropped that story weeks ago. And it wasn't so that we could forget it. It's because you had no idea what to do with it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, the idea of reintroducing the firm after they punted because they had no idea how to use the firm.
Yeah. They were doing long-term storytelling and fooling you all.
They have it. I mean, this is the only thing about, like, would changing champions do anything? I mean, I think it might help because the MJF thing is going, you know, it's kind of floundering for my taste. But I think they'd be in the same issues of, like, not knowing how to book their champion in a coherent way from week to week to week.
Final question, because I somebody pitched this to me, and I was like, I know, I hate that idea. Bryan Danielson wins, and MJF goes full-on out of control and has to chase again, then win the title back from Bryan Danielson the next time, but in a completely new revamped gimmick.
I mean, I don't love it.
Neither do I.
This Danielson was better. This week was better than like what we've gotten from Danielson in previous weeks. But I'm not convinced right now that he can capture the Daniel Bryan magic again.
Oh, I actually skipped Samoa Joe and Wardlow.
Yeah,
I think Hobbs wins that title somehow.
I do too. I think Hobbs is winning. I know.
There we go. We'll end it there. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on Twitter. You can follow Chris at Dr. Nov, DOCTOR_NOV on Instagram. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, podcasting for the educated professional wrestling fan. I also do a show called The Dynamite Show over on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. You can hear myself and Paul Ace Fontaine thoroughly deconstruct the week in AEW Dynamite hot takes before I bring the cold takes over here. Chris has other interests too. He'll tell you about them now.
Yeah, I'm interested in authenticity. And you can find authenticity here on this show every week in a format that we call Podcast Verite. I am also interested in cats. I have an Instagram. I teach music lessons. If you want music lessons, you can hit me up for those. I was interested in politics. I mean, I still might do a show. I haven't decided yet. I've got a lot of interests, Hawkins.
I don't.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.